KLYT Broadcast Studio. This is ABQ Connect.
Well, thanks for tuning in. As I mentioned, going into that last break, a full hour today on ABQ Connect with the Rio Grande Foundation President Paul Gessing. And before we get to bring Paul in, I do want to remind you on the website at klyt.fm, we are in that season of giving through the Christmas Critter campaign. And, you know, we have the typical gifts are there to give to those in need in Asia and Africa. A little more focus this year as well on the indigenous missionaries that actually deliver those gifts along with the gospel of Jesus Christ. But we would encourage you to go look through that Christmas Critter catalog at klyt.fm in the Action Center. If you get there, remember the Action Center is a slideshow, a carousel. Either wait for it or go to the next slide until you see Christmas Critter, or just scroll down to it's featured as for a month for the great mission for November and December. But to find that Christmas Critter banner and click on it, and it'll take you to the catalog. And if you don't, you know, prefer to give your gift digitally, as last year, we're doing it again this year, there's a toll-free number for you. It's 855-513-2127. Here's that number again, 855-513-2127, the Christmas Critter Campaign. Rescue families from poverty, show Christ's love through a gift at GFA World's Christmas Critter Campaign. And let's jump right into it with Paul Gessing. Paul, welcome into ABQ Connect.
Hey, good to be back with you, Steve.
Glad to have you here, and plenty to cover. Today is officially the first day the government is open.
It is. The U.S. federal government has reopened after the longest shutdown in American history. And I have a good friend who is up in D.C., works for the State Department. He had been off for the better part of 41 days, although he had done some work in that time frame. But he's back in his office, as I think most federal employees are at this point in time. So, we're glad that's done. Obviously, it's something that we don't want to happen again. And this reopening only lasts through January. It's something that I think both sides look bad regarding. But just to take it all factually, first and foremost, Republicans wanted to reopen government. They wanted to pass what's called a continuing resolution. That continuing resolution is simply Joe Biden's last budget. So this is not a conservative budget. And it's fact, one of the reasons that Rand Paul, Senator Paul, was one of the only, I believe, the only Republican in the Senate who voted against it.
Yeah, that's kind of a normal thing for him. It's not easy for him to get to sign off.
No, absolutely. But I think if there had been a more robust effort by the Trump administration once they took office back in January in Congress to move forward with a more conservative budget. You know, Biden, obviously liberal, the Senate and House, Democrat controlled. And I think there's a lot of angst, rightfully so, among some of these fiscal conservatives in Washington. Thomas Massie also voted against it. And, they want to see reductions in spending coming off of the Biden administration highs, coming off of COVID. That didn't happen. I hope that that is moved forward more expeditiously, shall we say, in terms of passing a new budget and getting that through. It's not going to be easy to do. Again, the filibuster remains in effect. I am very happy about that. I think it was a huge mistake to seriously contemplate eliminating the filibuster. That's the 60-vote requirement.
Is that discussion done? Are they done with that, or is that something they're still going to consider? I mean, I keep hearing things on, you know, reports, the talking heads basically saying, you know, hey, if you can confidently say that a Democrat administration or Democrat-run government for sure is not going to remove the filibuster. Or, yeah, if they're not going to, then absolutely leave it how it is. And quite honestly, I mean, I'm of the bent, you know, the founding fathers did it pretty darn well right off the bat. But some are saying, you know, if you knew for sure an incoming Democrat administration would remove it, then it would be a better idea to remove it now. But is the conversation done?
Well, let's take, as with everything, it's complicated.
Yeah, it is.
There was serious discussion in some Democratic circles with regard to eliminating the filibuster as recently as the Biden administration. And that could have led, in my estimation, and I'm not the only one talking about this, but some things that might have been considered would be statehood for Puerto Rico, statehood for the District of Columbia, because if the Democrats had power in both the House and Senate and there was no filibuster and they have the presidency, then you can do those kinds of things. What does that do? Well, congratulations, you now have four brand new U.S. Senate seats that are likely to be heavily Democratic. Then you have potential new members of the Supreme Court. There is nothing in the Constitution to say that the current number, 9, is the way things need to be.
Now, well, and it would be 4 senators, but it would also include, depending on population, right, more representatives in the House.
Oh, indeed, yes.
Yeah.
I don't know, D.C.'s somewhere on the order of 500,000 people. I think that's still only one House member, but I could be wrong. Puerto Rico's population's plummeted in recent years.
It's still close enough now that it matters. I mean,
oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
So the point is that I think the filibuster and eliminating it would have been a real, real treacherous, you know, tricky thing to do, and to achieve conservative goals long term with that. So I'm glad that we got through this without that happening. What happens if the Democrats and when the Democrats have control of both houses and the presidency, I think is an open question, but we'll cross that bridge when we get to it.
Yeah.
I'm glad that the Republicans and President Trump were not the ones to end the filibuster.
So, and actually back to the government reopening and the shutdown, there were 7 Democrats who, you know, crossed party lines, and one independent that crossed, or that
an independent that caucuses with the Democrats from Maine.
Yeah, that you know, because of their vote to pass the continuing resolution, the government is now open. But you know, local news is that your representatives, your senators from New Mexico, weren't part of the 8.
Yeah, this isn't a real surprise to anybody who follows these folks, but the members of New Mexico's congressional delegation, that's, of course, Martin Heinrich, Ben Ray Lujan in the Senate, then you have the House members, Melanie Stansbury, Teresa Legere Fernandez, and Gabe Vasquez. All of them voted against reopening the government. And you know, while I do blame President Trump and the Republicans for some strategic miscalculations to kind of allow this situation to occur, in the recent weeks, in the intransigence of the Democrats has been not only strategically, I think, contrary to their interest, but also against the interest of the United States. And they seem to me to be captured by their political base and unwilling or unable to stand up and say, we need to do this. We need to reopen the government, pass this continuing resolution for the good of the country, not because we're going to achieve some public policy goal. What they want to do, of course, and we talked about this last month, but I'll reiterate it for your listeners. When Obamacare passed, one of the ways that it expanded health care coverage, there's two ways: Medicaid expansion, and then these exchange-oriented healthcare plans, which are for people who are not covered through their employer. They have to go out on the individual market and purchase health insurance on their own. And these are heavily subsidized by the federal government. Then in 2021, during COVID, during the Biden administration, with the Democrats in control of Congress, they expanded upward on the income level, the number of people who could access these heavy government subsidies to buy insurance. They sunset it for the end of October of 2025. So because they sunset it, not making it permanent, not expanding this program, that is what caused us to wind up here. And the Republicans said, well, no, you're not going to just hold us hostage, literally and figuratively, for these dollars, these massive subsidies. Obamacare is a bad law. It's broken. It didn't do a lot of the things that it was supposed to do, like bending the cost curve down on healthcare. And so they were not interested in going along with that. So the Democrats really took it to the wall, metaphorically speaking, and just said, we're going to shut this government down and kind of throw a tantrum.
Well, and correct me if I'm wrong, Paul, and I don't know about all the New Mexico votes, the two senators and then the Congress people. Back in March, the Democrats, they voted to pass that budget, and nothing changed. This continuing resolution that 40 days ago, you know, was available to vote yes on, nothing had changed from March. It was clearly a way to leverage what they wanted to do in regards to Obamacare. I think there was a couple other things, including funding for public radio and TV.
The Democrats didn't really get anything out of the deal. And of course, we'll talk briefly about the election here at some point, and that is a factor here. There's a lot of questions and reasons around why the Democrats actually did what they did. I really think it is simple. The Democratic base despises President Trump so much that they were willing to engage in anything virtually in order to kind of push back, no matter how effective or ineffective it was. It was much more, we're just very upset and we're going to, like a little toddler, honestly, sitting on the floor.
I think it's actually going to be interesting in you know, 3 years or so, you know, after a new president is elected, and if that's a Republican president, if this kind of behavior doesn't continue, you know, was it Trump, or, you know, is the ideologies of the parties really that opposed at this time? Listen, we're up against a break. We're going to take a quick break and jump back into it with more from Errors of Enchantment. Many of the thoughts that Paul put into blogs there at errorsofenchantment.com. As I mentioned at the top of the hour, Paul is the president of Rio Grande Foundation. That website is riograndefoundation.org. He's also the co-host of Tipping Point New Mexico, which you can follow that podcast at tippingpointnm.com. And we're taking the content from today's conversation, for the most part, from errorsofenchantment.com. We're going to take a quick break and come back with more right after this on ABQ Connect. All right, a full hour today with Paul Gessing from the Rio Grande Foundation. Hey, I went through it right before we went to the break, but I want to remind you, you can go to riograndefoundation.org. And also the content we're covering today are blogs that Paul wrote at errorsofenchantment.com. Paul, actually, real quick, let's before we jump into our next blog post that you had at Errors of Enchantment. Tipping Point, New Mexico, the podcast, for those not familiar, tippingpointnm.com. Anything in that arena you want to call the listeners' attention to?
Oh, there's always something interesting going on over at Tipping Point, New Mexico. For example, just released today is conversation I had with State Senator Antonio Mo Maestas from right here in Albuquerque. He lives on the west side.
And as I look, I'm sorry to chuckle. It's a hot button of yours, Paul. the road funding, which is important, but I know it's a hot button with you.
Yes, we discuss roads. We discuss also housing and the housing crisis. Mo is, in my estimation, one of the more reasonable Democrats, certainly up in Santa Fe. He and I have some pretty significant disagreements that we kind of air out on the program over road funding and how that is supposed to work. And the reason it's a hot button issue is because I'm a limited government guy. I think, by and large, government should get out of the way of most people and their day-to-day lives, enforce the laws, try to stop people from killing each other, put the bad guys in jail when they do, and you know, build reasonable infrastructure, whether it's water or roads, to help people live their lives. And that's something that the government's not doing very well here in the land of enchantment. And so Mo has some perspectives on that, and we have a good, robust disagreement.
Well, you know what, though, Paul, I didn't listen to it yet, but I'm going to assume this was a reasoning conversation with etiquette and civil. And I would sure like to see more of that when it comes to discussions on opposing positions on some of these issues. And I'm just looking forward to hopefully seeing where you know, the Bible reminds us to come, let us reason together. And I appreciate the time you take to do that, not only with Mo, but I know with others on the Tipping Point.
And real quick, there's one additional one that I want to alert
please
people
do.
About. During Balloon Fiesta here locally, there was a gentleman that had put up some billboards around town talking about, you know, New Mexico and its failures on education as well as crime. The gentleman's name is Joe Digangi, D-I-G-A-N-G-I, and that's episode number 758. I call him the guy behind the billboards in the title. Because without further description, he got quite a bit of attention, specifically from Channel 13, but in general on social media, et cetera, from putting up these billboards to highlight during the most busy tourist-oriented time in Albuquerque the problems that our state faces and the reasons, you know, are what we discuss on the show. And why did he get fed up to the point where he put up billboards? What's his personal story? What's the future? That is the conversation I have with him. So, of course, tippingpointnm.com is a great way to find those episodes. And you can also subscribe on, you know, the Stitcher and Apple Podcasts, all the different web platform or the platforms for listening to your shows.
That's a great way to keep up to speed on things happening right here in the land of enchantment. And Errors of Enchantment is where we're headed now. Errorsofenchantment.com. Paul, one of the blog posts that you had in regards to SNAP, obviously November 1st was when the funds for that were expected to run out during the shutdown. And of course, moving forward, we hope to see no, that's just not going to be a flip of a switch. It's going to take a little bit to get people their SNAP benefits. But it was shocking to me, and you address it in the blog post, when I first saw what percentage of New Mexicans are on food stamps, SNAP.
Absolutely. It is unfortunate and in many ways kind of depressing, I think, to see New Mexico so dependent on the SNAP program. Now, I also included an article that was from Channel 7, KOAT, where they interviewed a woman who had been on food stamps for 30 years, dating back to the mid-90s. And that is kind of the problem writ large with some of these welfare programs, is that they're not a temporary I'm going to move forward in my life. And by the way, she showed no signs of physical or mental disability on her interview with the TV station, and that was not discussed. So, you know, we understand at the Rio Grande Foundation the need to help our fellow citizens. We have big disagreements with the way it is done. Specifically, I don't think the federal government should be the provider of food stamps. I think, well, it's not in the Constitution. It should be done at the state level. And there would be a lot more responsibility and innovation if you let those laboratories of democracy spread their wings and actually come up with different solutions.
Well, and certainly NGOs and churches should be a big part of that. And
the churches should absolutely be a big part of that. But we've gotten away from that, at least mentally, in this country. I know churches do a great deal, including right here at Calvary, but there needs to be a focus on those caring people helping out. And those people are also not bottomless pits, unlike government. They're not going to just let people stay on government welfare unless they're truly in a state where they cannot help themselves. But for 30 years, that's ridiculous. So the map I posted is from a website called USA Facts. And it's just a map of the United States with the different rates of food stamp dependency on it. New Mexico's number one, as I like to say, with a bullet. You know, good radio phrase there, with a bullet at the number one. New Mexico, 21.2% of our population is on food stamps. That is way too much.
It's nearly half, about a half a million people, just short of.
Just short of it, yes. And to give you a real impression of how far out of whack we are, our neighboring state of Utah has 4.8% of its population on food stamps. So less than a quarter of ours. Even Louisiana, the worst state besides New Mexico on food stamps, they're at 18.4%, which is a far cry from 21.2% here in New Mexico. States like Colorado and Texas, neighbors of ours, have less than half of the number of people percentage-wise on food stamps. And it's just not the way things should work. And there's been a lot of controversy on this. The Trump administration tried to get information from the states as to what their people on food stamps were in terms of, are they illegal immigrants? Are they deserving of these programs? And the state of New Mexico has withheld that information and is in litigation against the Trump administration. These are some of the ways that we need to consider fixing this food stamp, the SNAP program.
I'll tell you, when the SNAP, late October, when it was kind of, hey, November 1st, my concern was, okay, people who are truly hungry and truly in need, we need to, as a community, find a way to get them fed. However, we need to not just do that and then just, it needs to be fixed. There's probably no easy solution. You and I both probably, Paul, can throw out some ideas that I'm sure our legislators are well aware of and many ignore. Just a reminder, especially for you listening from the church, believers in Christ, there are NGOs out there that you can be supportive of that do make it a point to get food in the mouths of those that are hungry, even specifically children who are the innocent victims in much of this. But absolutely something we need to do. And Paul, when I saw what the governor was doing with, I had the number wrong when we spoke off the air, stopgap, not knowing the government would open when it did. And I don't know where they are with that as far as proceeding with what the governor was going to do with, I guess that came out of the state surplus to put towards the people that would normally get SNAP. We talked, in times past about that $60+ billion surplus, and there's all kinds of things we could be doing with it, but they're waiting for a rainy day. And it certainly felt like it was raining, and it seems like that was a good decision to feed those who need to be fed, but the problem's got to be fixed.
Yeah, the legislature met on Monday and passed $162 million worth of food stamp money. And I agree, I don't know exactly where that is all going to go now that the funds have, maybe not, they're not available yet, but they're in the process of coming available. What, if any, financial liability will the state of New Mexico have, and how much of that will just return to the Treasury? How much of that will be actually spent to fill that gap? And will the federal government reimburse New Mexico? Those are questions I don't have the answers to. I do have one additional point I want to make, though, and that is Channel 13 did a story, KRQE. Well, we'll just read the title. Food Money for Drugs, SNAP Traded for Fentanyl. And this is yet another of many, many ways in which the SNAP program is in desperate need of reform.
How does that work? I'll tell you, in decades past, we were back then, I think it was EBT,
right?
And it was a time we needed it, and I was working, and we, you know, it was a for a time, as it was intended. And I just, unless they have just a card that's loaded and they don't check IDs or, I don't get how you can trade your SNAP benefits unless you're handed cash or, to trade it for, do you know how that works?
Well, I have not really familiarized myself, we'll just say, with the SNAP program in terms of its inner workings. All I know
they can do
is
it. Somehow they can do
there
it.
There is a Jeez. Will and there is a way, and it is detailed, although they don't exactly go into, in great detail, exactly how it was done, maybe just to not have people using it as a recipe for how they engage in illegal activity.
Right. But
This is a story dated November 11th, 2025. So it's very, very recent in terms of when it was published. And they cite a case, at least one investigation that was done busting people for trading SNAP benefits for fentanyl. And that is.
Let me say this real quick. Since the drug abuse and addiction came up, I was just today over at U-Turn for Christ. Checking out their new coffee shop is right next to the thrift store that's there on San Mateo. But U-Turn for Christ here in New Mexico are able to reach out to at-risk men and women that are dealing with addiction. And I would encourage you to look them up, U-Turn for Christ, New Mexico. If it's not in need of their services, to be supportive of the work that they're doing to make a difference in this community when it does come to those that are addicted to fentanyl and meth and other drugs and alcohol. That is sad to hear that, and I guess maybe not the first time I heard it, but yeah, a reminder, Paul, that many use those SNAP benefits to feed a habit.
Yeah, and it's hard to say exactly how many, but some number for sure. And again, I don't think the federal government has previously done a very good job of holding users accountable for the way food stamps are actually used, what they go for. There's been also talk of trying to limit or eliminate junk food. And that's, I think, a worthwhile conversation.
Yeah.
Whether the federal government does this or not, I think, is the bigger question. I would love to see the experimentation done at the state level with the money paid out at the state level from the state treasury, not the federal government, which is now $38 trillion in debt. That is clearly a second or third best approach. What we're doing now.
All right. Well, listen, a full hour today with Paul Gessing from the Rio Grande Foundation. That website, again, is Rio Grande Foundation. Grande Foundation, RioGrandeFoundation.org. Paul is the co-host of Tipping Point New Mexico, the podcast. You can go to tippingpointnm.com To catch up with a couple of stories that he mentioned. One just released today, a conversation he had with Senator Antonio Maestas on road funding issues, housing, and more, and also called attention to a recent blog or a recent podcast titled The Guy Behind the Billboards. And is it Joe DeGangi? Is that how you say that?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. But check those out, as well as where we are bringing this content from today, the blog posts, Paul's provided at errorsofenchantment.com. Hey, we're going to take a break. Come back with more right after this on ABQ Connect. Hey, we're in the midst of a conversation with Paul Gesing. Covered a lot already in today's broadcast, full hour with Paul, the president of Rio Grande Foundation. Go to riograndefoundation.org to find out more. And Paul, let's press on. We talked about the amount of the percentage of New Mexicans that take advantage of SNAP benefits, awfully high, and of course that correlates with the poverty level here in New Mexico. And recently you wrote a blog post about what our governor, MLG, had to say about poverty.
Yeah. And these conversations that we're having, by the way, all kind of fit in together because, there's been so much talk about the government shutdown and the SNAP and the various issues, all aligned with the ultimate underlying solution or issue is poverty. And it's something that we believe, and I've talked about this, but I definitely want to have this conversation again, that New Mexico is not doing a good job of alleviating poverty. The governor is more than happy to call a special session to fill in the gaps for various welfare programs, and she's done that now twice in the last month or so. But when it comes to poverty as an underlying feature of our economy, New Mexico is a prosperous state. I use that term advisedly. State is doing very well. State has lots of money, $66 billion sitting in the sovereign wealth funds, growing the government, as we've seen during Lujan Grisham's time in office, by 71%. The state is doing very well. The people of New Mexico, not doing as well. So the governor put this out on Twitter. Poverty isn't inevitable. Sometimes it's a symptom of outdated or ineffective policies. That's why my administration championed legislation to provide struggling families, blah, 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 with support they need to thrive. Well, the best solution for poverty is a job, a good paying job, and a little bit of understanding of how money works and how you use that money to invest it and make more money for yourself and your family to lead better lives into the future. But it all starts with having a good paying job and the responsibility that comes with that, and then building it into something better and better over time. And everybody I know started out pretty close to the bottom at their respective place of work. They might have made decent money at the outset, but more often than not, they were working a relatively low-wage job, and then they got experience, became more valuable, and started to earn more and more money. And that is the model that we need to imprint upon our youth and our people in New Mexico. And the poverty failures come from a state that hangs on to the money, doesn't return it to the people, doesn't make New Mexico a more attractive place to do business, and ultimately makes the people more dependent than they need to be on these government programs, such as SNAP, such as Medicaid, and the numerous other programs that the governor has decided to enact. And it's a fundamental difference of opinion, but it's a fundamental difference between her and myself based on long-term experience. Socialist models, government-heavy models, tend not to work. We have very, very good data on this. New Mexico is a perfect example of a state that's got a lot of resources. It's got a lot of money. It could do more to make its people wealthier and diversify its economy. But poverty is a policy choice, as the governor says, and she has chosen poverty.
Yeah, Paul, one of the things she's chosen is a quote-unquote free child care program that, you know, I don't want to try to recall, you can better than I, why she was doing that. But you also wrote a blog post in regards to that child care program that may surprise some people.
Yeah, well, first and foremost, this is yet another in a very long line of expensive and very so-called generous welfare programs. And again, that is the mindset the governor has. She talked about, while her campaigns left a lot of issues to be questioned, she consistently has talked about her cradle to career approach to government, which is essentially government involved or even supporting financially New Mexicans at every stage of their lives. And again, this is not when government is your mommy and daddy. Government is going to call the shots, and government is not an ideal mommy or daddy, to say the least. And it, literally, we're dealing with that in this case. Free child care. What does that mean? Well, the governor, first and foremost, is making child care available for free to people in New Mexico earning above 400% of the federal poverty level. Federal poverty level for 400%, that's about $110,000 for a family of three. That is a good income. That is well above the median income of the state. But more importantly and more fundamentally, according to The Economist, that is a well-regarded magazine that does reporting on economic issues across, I think they're British, but they have a U.S. edition. They had an article titled, "Universal Child Care Can Harm Children." So the subtitle was, "Its Growing Popularity in America is a Concern." So they're not hiding the ball here. They're pretty much explaining what the problem is from the get-go. And they cite reports and studies on the issue that do indicate that free child care can be harmful to children. How is that? Well, shifting to universal child care appeared to lead to a rise in aggression, anxiety, and hyperactivity, as well as a fall in motor and social skills. The effects were large. Anxiety rates doubled. Roughly a third more kids were reported to be hyperactive. Indeed, the difference in hyperactivity rates was larger than is typically reported between boys and girls. And that is a professionally done academic study indicating that free child care has some real issues with it. And that's another aspect of what my critique is of the governor, is that not only does she not decide whether this is the highest and best use of the money, she doesn't even really analyze or try to study whether this program's actually good for the children that's supposed to benefit. Now, why would it be harmful? Well, we're talking about very little kids, 0 to 3 years old in a lot of cases here. And those are children that should ideally be at home with their mom or their dad and under the care of a parent, not shipped off to some government-funded daycare center.
Someone who has the best interest for that 0 to 3 year old, and you know, when you hear things like free, a couple things come to mind for me. One, you get what you pay for. But the truth is, Paul, free, you're paying for it. But again, to look at, you know, how many government programs are, you know, I think I'm hard pressed, you might be as well, to tell me a government program that is run well.
I would say that traditionally the Interstate Highway Program was one of the greatest if there you not go. The greatest federal government program of all time. But we're talking about
your kids.
Yeah, that's a far cry from the government of New Mexico managing a child care program to essentially replace mom and dad in the home. And I think that is a real fundamental problem and another disagreement that we have. Now, to be fair, this program has already been begun. It has already taken effect. The governor was able to essentially redirect various resources to that program and kick it off, if you will, as of November 1st. Now, that doesn't mean that it is permanent. In fact, the legislature will be meeting in January, and they will have to debate this particular issue. I think there is some concern, both in terms of the fundamental benefit or drawback of this program, as well as with the way that the governor has undertaken this program, because she didn't ask for the legislature. She went ahead and did it herself in the months in advance of her final legislative session, a short 30-day session where there's already going to be a lot on the table to discuss. And now she's dumped this in the laps of the legislature and said, I want this program done, but I really don't have much political capital at this point to get it done. So it'll be interesting to see how they react, even though it is, of course, a Democratic-controlled body.
All right. Listen, if you just tuned in, we're spending a full hour today with Paul Gessing, president of the Rio Grande Foundation, co-host of Tipping Point New Mexico podcast, and, of course, the primary writer you find at errorsofenchantment.com blog posting. And we're going through many of those blog posts on today's broadcast. We've got one more break to get through. We're going to do that and come back with more to wrap up the hour on ABQ Connect. Hey, thanks for joining us. We've been spending a full hour today visiting with Paul Gessing, the president of Rio Grande Foundation, riograndefoundation.org. And before we jump back into our conversation, I do want to remind you about an opportunity for you to go to our website to participate in the Christmas Critter campaign with GFA World. If you go in the Action Center on that slideshow there, find that banner, click on it, and it'll take you to the Christmas Critter catalog. Let me read you what Bishop Daniel with GFA, the president of GFA World, had to say. He said, the challenge is to wrap our minds around these numbers. 3 billion people, and 90% of them do not have access to the message of Christ. Another way to think about this is 80,000 people go into a Christless eternity every single day. Make missions part of your daily life. Ask the Lord to break your heart for the things that break his heart. Find out more about supporting the indigenous missionaries in Asia and Africa through GFA World. And they, of course, delivering the gifts that many of you are providing in that catalog as well. Find all the details at klyt.fm or call toll-free 1-855-513-2127. Back to our conversation with Paul. Paul, again, thanks for taking the time. We wanted to wrap up with another blog post you had from Errors of Enchantment about the court ratifying City of Albuquerque donation to Planned Parenthood, something I know most all of our listeners will want an update on and have some concern for.
Yeah, this is unfortunate, to say the least, but the backstory is that my organization sued the City of Albuquerque City Council, specifically in New Mexico courts, during the time between the leaking of the Dobbs decision. That's the one that restored abortion law to the state level from the federal level. That took that decision away from the federal government. The City Council of Albuquerque, just because they really like Planned Parenthood, decided to hand them a check for $250,000 just for the heck of it. no requirements that they even do anything to earn that money. And we believe that, and still believe that this is in conflict with New Mexico's constitutional anti-donation clause. It was a provision put into the state's constitution at its founding for, among other reasons, the fact that railroads were gaming state-level political systems in order to get large amounts of money and resources from the state government. So the founders of New Mexico said, that's not a good idea. We don't want that to happen. We will put something in our constitution to prohibit donations from government to private interests. While there have been changes made over the years and it's been weakened, I still feel like this particular issue very much should be illegal, in the sense that this is not even economic development. It is just because city council wanted to fund Planned Parenthood. And unfortunately, the judge, Denise Barella Shepherd, one of many judges in Albuquerque that I think need to be replaced for a variety of reasons, not just this kind of thing, but also, of course, because they were instrumental in allowing our crime and homeless problems to grow out of control. But the judge ruled against us and basically said, sure, if the state or if the state or the legislative bodies or city council wishes to hand over taxpayer dollars for virtually any reasons to virtually anybody, apparently they can do that. That's tragic.
Well, that pretty well wraps up the various conversations we're going to have about the blog post that Paul put it. errorsofenchantment.com. But Paul, less than a minute left, and it's not posted yet, but we do want to tease an event that the Rio Grande Foundation is going to be announcing shortly.
Yeah, if you're listening to this, check back to our Rio Grande Foundation website maybe by this evening. We will have an event posted. Go to riograndefoundation.org, go to the event tab, and we will be having a luncheon on December 3rd. The gentleman speaking is named Connor Boyack. That name may not mean much to you, but what it does mean is that he is the author of an array of books called the Tuttle Twins series. And it's great for homeschoolers. It's great for my own kids who I read them to. And there's a whole series all the way up to the teenage years. And of course, adults can read them too, down to really little kids, showing them the importance of the ideas of liberty, individual freedom, and respect for righteous laws and rules.
Paul, thanks again for your time. And look forward to having you back in again next month.
Sounds good.
All right. Thanks, and thank you for taking the time to listen to ABQ Connect.
ABQ Connect is a production of KLYT. The views expressed on ABQ Connect do not necessarily reflect the views of the staff or management of KLYT.